in 16 years, Kevin, the amount of people that have come through the doors of my clinic that could pass the basic functional exam, I could count on two hands in 16 years. And yet, if I went to the park that my kids play at and I tested any five-year-old, it would be a game for them. It would be so easy. It would be a joke.
If you haven't done so already, go ahead and click that subscribe button down below. It's a little red button. You punch that and it's going to notify you every time we put out a new episode that can help you improve your bone health. And then also, if you haven't done so already, head over to bonecoach.com, sign up for the free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart. That's going to walk you through everything you need to be doing right now to get on the path to improvement and stronger bones. After you do those two things, go ahead and press play on this episode and I'll see you inside. Welcome to this episode of the Bone Coach Show. Joining us today to explore the art and science of chronic pain resolution is Dr. Yoni Whitten. Dr. Yoni is an expert in the art and science of permanent pain resolution. In addition to his hands-on work with patients over the last 16 years, Dr. Whitten has spent years researching and studying with experts in manual medicine, functional neurology, and rehabilitation. Through his practice, he has developed a revolutionary approach to chronic pain. Now, the system that Dr. Whitten developed has been codified and is available to chronic pain sufferers around the world. The Pain Fix Protocol blends the latest scientific research with essential concepts from the fields of natural movement, evolutionary health, nutrition, structural hygiene, self-care, and human performance. Dr. Yoni, it is a pleasure to have you here today. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Kevin.
Great to have you. And I love to start out with even just giving a background on your story, how you got to this point, how you got into this field even.
Sure. Yeah. My background is I was a lifelong athlete. I started out in martial arts at a very young age, like 5 years old, just as the way of my parents channeling a kid that had a lot of energy. And then over the years of continuing with that, I got into competition and then I was looking for any competitive edge I could get. And so I started studying anatomy, physiology, strength training, really began to be fascinated by the process of how humans adapt to different stimuli. And so I would say that more than anything led me down the path. I studied kinesiology for my undergrad, which is the study of movement, and just was fascinated by it. And all the while, I'm applying these concepts in real time to my training and to advance and become better in competition. And then kind of the natural extension of the work in the classroom was to get into chiropractic with hands-on, which is something that, you know, my family had been doing since I was a little kid. So it seemed so natural to me that people did this just because that's what I grew up in. So it was normal. I began to realize as an adult that there's people who go through life never knowing what it feels like to feel good. They feel bad all the time. That's a crazy thing to wrap your head around. You know, the nutritional example would be the person who goes through their entire life with a runny nose or postnasal drip, and they have no idea that they have like a food sensitivity. And so every time they sit down to have a meal, they're literally feeding this postnasal drip, not having any idea that one relates to the other. And so with chiropractic, it was like, wow, I can take the concepts that I learned in kinesiology and I can literally implement them with my hands. Instead of just instructing somebody, I could make the change for them. And then I started combining the two and kind of the coaching aspect. I love the name of your program, Bone Coach, because it has that element of I'm empowering you with this knowledge so that you can take it and run with it. And so that's what I started doing. I did the things that people can't do for themselves by hand. And then all the things that they could do for themselves, my goal was to slowly teach them how to do all of those things and then understand the context and why they're doing what they're doing.
I love that you've moved into a position where you're not focused on creating a dependency. You're focused on creating a situation where we have an empowered, confident person that can move forward and help themselves beyond.
Well, you're 100% right. You know, when I was getting into healthcare, there was this transition taking place of the information age, and the role of the clinician changed dramatically when that happened. You know, it went from come into my office, sit down, shut up, and I'm going to tell you everything. To that person is walking around with a supercomputer in their hand. You are not going to blow their mind with anything that you tell them because they've got it all in front of them. What the role of the clinician became in that switch was a filter of sorts, because now we have these people who have too much information and they're being pulled almost in a million different directions, and they don't know which direction is going to get them to their goal. But I mean, there's nothing new under the sun, you know, everything is out there. It's a matter of filtering it down, giving them what they need, and making sure that they don't get distracted by things that are going to pull them in the wrong direction. But absolutely, that the dependency model is so dead. You know, it's not helpful for the patient. I always said to patients, you know, even in the beginning of my career in the early 2000s, if we're doing the exact same thing every time you come in, you should fire me, because it means we're not getting anywhere. You know, so it needs to be that empowerment model in order to be sustainable and have long-term success.
And you've really developed a skill set in an area of health that needs that, which is pain and chronic pain. So let's talk about how does pain become chronic?
Well, pain is an interesting thing. It's, you know, at the base level, it's just a warning sign from your body that something's wrong. You know, imagine driving in your car and the check engine light comes on. That's pain. You got the computer of the vehicle is telling you that there's a problem. Now, you don't know exactly what that problem is when that light comes on. And that is your task when you have pain. Pain comes with a lesson, I like to say. And your task is to figure out what that lesson is. Are you standing in the kitchen and your hand is getting a little bit too close to a hot stove? But pain is essentially there. It's just to alert you that something's going on. It's like a spidey sense, right? And it's evolutionarily designed and perfected to keep us alive. That's it. Keep you alive long enough to spread your DNA. That's the role of pain. How pain becomes chronic is when you fail to understand that pain is there for a reason, that it's trying to tell you something, and you don't take the steps to uncover what that pain, why that pain is there. Instead, you run to mask it. The classic example there is, and we're trained to do this in the media. I have a headache. Don't bother asking any questions about the headache. Just run and take a pill to cover it up. You know, no, what did I eat? How much sleep did I get last night? What's my hydration status? How are my trace minerals? Have I done the things necessary for my body to function normally, or have I not? Really what it is. And we can get into the neurology if your audience is interested in that. But at a base level, it's failing to take the step and ask the question, why is this happening?
This is interesting, because a lot of people think immediately pain is a bad thing.
That's right.
But what you're sharing is pain is a good thing. It's information that we should be acting on. It only becomes a real problem if we don't listen to what our body is telling us and address those underlying things, which is, I love that.
Well, the extreme example of what you just said is the person who's born with an inability to feel pain. Now, that is a serious handicap, because that's the person who gets their hand close to the hot stove. They get no warning, and then they get a serious burn because their body is not functioning properly. So you're 100% right.
Why is this such a big problem? Why is chronic pain such a big problem in our modern society now?
I think it has to do a lot with conditioning. So it's very strange. And I'll put forward the example for you. So when a person goes into the conventional medical system, suffering with almost any kind of chronic pain, they take a three-step approach to the problem. So you go in to see your doctor, and the doctor does a quick examination, basically show me where it hurts. Almost immediately, with very little physical examination, they're going to send you out for imaging, usually an x-ray. If the x-ray comes back clean, no fracture, no dislocation, heaven forbid, nothing exotic, right? They send you home politely with a prescription for painkillers or anti-inflammatories, often another for muscle relaxants, and a recommendation to rest or immobilize the painful area. Super weird, because People completely accept that. But if we took that pain, Kevin, and we put it in the mouth, and you went to a dentist, and the dentist peeked in your mouth because you had some tooth pain, then they did an x-ray, but they didn't see anything, would you ever accept that they just gave you painkillers and sent you home and told you to rest your tooth? No, nobody would accept that. For some strange reason, the mouth and jaw operates on a different rule set than the whole rest of people's bodies. Like, we totally accept it everywhere else, and yet for the mouth, nobody would accept it. It's very weird. You would say to that dentist, no, figure out what's going on with my mouth. Don't just send me out of here covering up the symptoms. I need to know what's going on. We need to do the exact same thing for the body. The dental profession has done a phenomenal job educating people. The first question that dentist is going to ask if they see something, have you been brushing and flossing your teeth? What have you been eating? Have you been eating, you know, sugary drinks that have phosphorus in them that erode your teeth? We need to make some dietary changes. We need to get your hygiene going so that, and then I'm going to fix the problem that's in there, but you need to take some steps to participate in this process. Now, if we were doing that exact same model with the most common chronic pain conditions in the world, there would be a lot less pain. And pain is an absolute epidemic. You're talking about 1.5 billion people in the world, roughly 20% of the world's population suffering with chronic pain. It's the number is crazy. And really what it comes down to, Kevin, is that the approach that what most people get when they go into that system is directly in conflict with the expert recommendations that have been set out for that system to operate it under. There's a weird disconnect going on.
And I know one of the contributors for pain, especially with our audience too, with bone health and osteoporosis, is someone has a fracture, let's mm-hmm. say, and then that's a signal for, that's obviously going to create some pain for them. But I'm really interested to understand from your perspective, what role do things like posture play in preventing those fractures that we typically see with osteoporosis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. So one of the most common postural dysfunctions that we see in the modern age is forward head position. Now, it has a bunch of fancy names nowadays, tech neck, neck hump. People are calling it all these different things, but essentially it's a forward head position. And the root of that problem, Kevin, is that the normal curvature in the neck, which if I'm facing this direction, is a backward curve, otherwise known as a lordosis. It's the same type of curve that you have in your lower back, right? Everybody knows what the lower back curve looks like. We have the exact same type of curve in the neck. These are known as secondary curves because we're not born with them. The primary curve is what we're born with. That's fetal position, where we're curved forward like a shrimp, okay? And then anybody who has kids knows that first thing that kid starts to do is lift their head up by themselves. As they're lifting their head up, they're training that normal backward curve into the neck. And it's done very intelligently to that curve helps to support the weight of the head. So essentially think of like a golf ball sitting on a tee, right? We have this big structure sitting on a little structure, which is the neck. The skeletal structure of the neck is tiny compared to the skull, right? So there's a lot of weight to hold up there. And the body puts that curve in to minimize the amount of effort that's required to hold that weight. So it's an efficiency model, which is absolutely necessary for the only species that walks upright on 2 feet 100% of the time, right? We need to minimize our energy expenditure so that we can, again, it's like pain. It's to ensure survivability. So what we're seeing nowadays is that because of an abundance of what are called flexion-based activities, this is where the head is down, we're looking at our phones or our smartwatches or our laptop computers or whatever it may be, we spend an inordinate amount of time looking downward nowadays. And what we end up doing is actually training that curve out of the neck. And the problem with that is you're making the body measurably less efficient. You're increasing the workload on the body. So here's what happens in a nutshell. For every inch that the head shifts forward in front of the gravity line, in front of its optimal position, it gains 10 pounds of functional weight. Okay. So to better understand that, think of holding a dumbbell here, like tight to your body, and a 10 pound dumbbell, because that head weighs about 10 pounds. You start inching it out. you can imagine how much heavier that dumbbell feels, even though it still weighs 10 pounds. You can imagine how much harder your bicep muscle and your shoulder has to work to hold it way out here than it does when it's in close, right? Same thing happens to the head. So when you do this for extended periods of time, you actually train that curve out of the neck. Now, what the body will intelligently do in response to this, and this is a very long answer to get back to your question, is it's going to take your middle back and shift it outward. So head goes this way, mid back shifts this way. Okay. The problem with that, Kevin, is that that is there to counterbalance the head weight. But when you have a vertebrae that's shaped like this, when you look at it from the side, when you shift it out, you start compressing the front end almost like a slice of pizza. And where do you see the fractures with osteoporosis? Right at the front edge of the vertebrae. It's due to overload in that position. And I would put forth the bet, if we were going to Las Vegas, that anybody who has fractures at the front portion of the vertebrae has a forward head position, i.e. a loss of the normal curvature in the neck, which means, if you extrapolate that, if you can maintain the normal secondary curves in your body, you can evenly distribute the stress across the entirety of the vertebrae, thereby lessening the chances of getting those types of compression fractures.
That was probably the best explanation I've ever heard of forward posture, forward head posture connection to, you know, bone health and even in your spine. And I bet a lot of people listening and watching right now, maybe sat up a little bit straighter and did a little, push their chin back a little bit as they were listening to that. That was fantastic. Thank you.
So I'm a total biomechanics geek because it's everything. Like I started out, like I said, in sport. If you can optimize efficiency in whatever activity you're doing, it means you're lessening energy expenditure. It means that you have more energy to have conversations with interesting people like we're doing now. You know, you have more time for your kid, more energy for your kids. You have more energy for your spouse. You have more energy to put into contributing to the world. And when you take away that efficiency, you see those people in chronic pain that are suffering because they're spending 20, 30, 40, 50% more calories just doing their basic bodily functions. You know what else happens when the head shifts forward and that middle back shifts backward? The middle back locks down as a protective mechanism, but that's where your ribs are. So it means that your ribs can expand. We have scientific evidence that people with severe forward head posture lose as much as 30% of their vital lung capacity. Decreased oxygenation, you're getting less essential nutrients to your brain, to your body. You can't flush out metabolic waste as efficiently. You can't feed your body the fuel that it needs in order to run your metabolic processes. It's absolutely devastating. And we've got six studies since 2018 that show that about 70% of the modern day population has overt signs of forward head position.
Wow. Wow. Those are really interesting numbers. So, I mean, is there something that, as somebody's listening to this and maybe they're sitting and they have used technology, you know, and they've been leaning over for a long period of time, is there a way to even just have some minor correction or something that can help with that? And I know we've got audio listeners and video listeners too, but sure. Is there a quick tip there that people could even implement?
So there's a lot of tips. The first one that I like to say is, if you've had any first aid training, the number one thing is stop the bleeding, right? So what I'm not telling people to do is to stop using technology. You know, we've gone too far. We've opened up Pandora's box. What technology can do for us is absolutely incredible, but it does require some responsibility on the part of the user, right? It's possible to use technology without looking down. It's possible to position yourself to optimize your tech use. Well, I mean, one of the simple examples to stop the bleeding, right? Stop the head being trained into a forward head position. So you need to minimize the amount of time that you spend looking down. If you work on a laptop computer all day long, you need to understand that if you're looking down all day long, you are where your eyes go, the body follows. That's why if a person is training to do a spinning move in like gymnastics or ice skating, the eyes whip around first. So head leads, body follows. If you're looking down all day long, you need to get yourself, spend the $20, get an external keyboard and move your laptop up so that you're looking up. That's a simple tip. Super simple tip. One thing that I would stress about posture correction is, like we talked about in the beginning, it's an adaptation. So whatever you do repeatedly, you get good at. So if you want to get good at having good posture, you need to practice having good posture. Now, there's a huge asterisk to that, which is that posture is regulated at the subconscious level. Thank God, right? Just like our breathing and beating our heart, we don't have to think about it, right? So if you want your posture to be fully optimized, you have to get to the point where you're training it on the subconscious level. So it starts out as a conscious endeavor, much the same way that anybody who is knows how to drive a stick shift. In the beginning, you have to think about clutch, stick, turn signal, steering wheel, all those things. After a year of driving stick or 6 months of driving stick, you don't think about any of that stuff. It all happens automatically. So the same thing with posture. In the beginning, you'll have to think about what your head position is or where your head is. So like I said a minute ago, head leads, body follows. You want to correct posture? The number one thing that you need to be aware of is your head position. No matter where your postural dysfunction is, by the way, if you have a severe mid-back curve, fix your head. If you have a loss of lordosis in your lower back, fix your head. You got a problem with your feet, fix your head. Yeah, so head position is the king.
Love it. Now, I know we just talked about fractures and posture and things like that. And the bigger picture of chronic pain, what are some of the other bigger contributors that you see to chronic pain?
Sure. Yeah, I think this is a part of the reason that I really wanted to talk to you, Kevin, because I think that there's a lot of carryover between the reasons that osteoporosis exists and osteopenia exists, because it's totally unnatural. I would submit that if you go to study any hunter-gatherer tribe and you did DEXA scans on them, you know, and bone density scans, you wouldn't find any osteopenia or osteoporosis anywhere in those societies. And yet we have an epidemic, and the people who you talk to who have those problems, they feel like it's happening to them. It's spinning completely out of control. And when you understand the factors that contribute to those problems, you can say, oh, I see, it was this, this, and this. And that's not to point fingers, that's to offer solutions, because then when you understand what contributed to it, you can now make the changes necessary to alter the course of where that person is headed, right? And you're shaking your head. So I know this is something that you do in your business and with your members. And so it's the same with chronic pain. So there are some very consistent things that we see in the people who come into my clinic suffering with chronic pain. So over the last 16 years, that's who I've worked with, is just the niche of people suffering with chronic pain. So oftentimes these people have been to see multiple other doctors before they get in to see me. And there's been some very simple things overlooked. So what I said about the headache example earlier pertains to all chronic pain. In other words, have you been doing the things that are necessary for your body to function optimally? So I do a very basic clinical evaluation of people when they come in. There's a structural component, there is a basic functional component, and there is an advanced functional component. Now, in 16 years, Kevin, the amount of people that have come through the doors of my clinic that could pass the basic functional exam, I could count on two hands in 16 years. And yet, if I went to the park that my kids play at and I tested any five-year-old, it would be a game for them. It would be so easy. It would be a joke. So it's not a hard test. It's very basic stuff. Can you turn your head a normal amount to one side? Can you get down and up off the floor? The amount of people that have passed that test in 16 years, less than 10. So we see that there's this direct correlation between structure and function and pain signals in the body, especially when you're talking about the most common pain conditions in the world. So what's the most common? Lower back pain. Talking roughly 500 million people in the world suffering with lower back pain. What's next? Neck pain, headaches. Well, you want to talk about neck pain. 70% of the population has a forward head position. If you go in and you've got forward head position and you don't correct your head posture, it's like going into the doctor asking why your hand hurts and yet you're spending all day whacking yourself in the hand with a hammer, right? If the structure is not proper, it cannot function properly. It's like having a wheel that's not round and going like, oh, I wonder why it's not rolling properly. Well, it can't. What you're asking it to do is literally not possible. So it's just a matter of time. And so these things are intended to give a person agency over their problem and say, if I do these few things, right, then I can improve my situation. And after you get to neck pain and headaches, you start getting into all of your different joint pains, like shoulders, knees, hips, all those kinds of things. But structure and function should be considered primarily. And you start getting into nutrition, you start getting into fitness, which is the one where there's a huge carryover between osteoporosis and chronic pain, because fitness levels have deteriorated in this country severely over the last 50 years in particular.
But I like what you're saying here is that there is some ownership, right? That the individual has, and that they can do something about this. They can take control. It's not all just these things happening to them or acting upon them. They should be. An active guide in their own health, which is
great. You're exactly right. And in my experience, Kevin, the people who are willing to take that ownership, to use your term, are the ones who have the very real chance of getting to where they want to be. It's a very good point.
Yeah, I see that too. Are there any big mistakes that people make as they're going in to try to address these chronic pain issues that they have? What are the biggest mistakes that people are making that you see?
The biggest mistake is to piggyback on what you said a second ago, to assume that it's happening to them and that there's no reason for it. So the goal, like I said, the task for the person when pain is present is to figure out why it's present. And then the number two mistake that people have really been conditioned to do is to try and cover up the symptoms before figuring out what the lesson is. You know, covering up the symptoms may be a part of the plan, but if that's the only plan, it's not a good thing. You know, like I said before, the dental profession has done a phenomenal job. You know, the person who has tooth pain is going to ask at some point, how have I been doing with my dental hygiene? You know, am I brushing and flossing as much as I should? Or is it the person who has their checkup coming up and then they start brushing and flossing because they want to impress their dentist? It's like, you're the one that has to live with it. You should be doing this for you, not for the dentist. So the same thing really with chronic pain.
You know, for me, it's like when I spent multiple years in the Marine Corps in the infantry. Like I put my body through quite a bit during that time, and I came out of that with, you know, a lot of pain in different areas. Sure. And I used to just go get 800 milligram ibuprofen three times a day, which was not good for kidneys, not good for gut health, not good for all that stuff. Painkillers. I used to do all that stuff. So I'm intimately familiar with what it feels like to live in a body that has quite a bit of pain for a long period of time.
Sure.
What is the, and I see a lot of other people that maybe they're not to that extreme, but they are doing other things to manage that pain. And I'm doing air quotes here as I'm talking to Dr. Yoni, but what's the difference between pain management and pain resolution?
Yeah. It's a really good question. Let me start off with a bomb that was dropped in a journal in May of 2022. The journal was Science Translational Medicine just this year. And these researchers did this very thorough experiment where they tested an animal model. I believe they were using mice. And what they did was they gave these mice non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs that blocked the normal inflammatory response to a pain condition that the scientists actually caused. So they did something to create back pain, and then they gave these mice non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. What they found in those mice, Kevin, is that mice that had their normal inflammatory reaction blocked in the early stages of the onset of pain had pain that was prolonged as much as 10 times the normal duration. Yes, that's the correct response. Now, check this out. The scientists did a follow-up in a human model with TMJ, pain again, in a different part of the body. They saw exactly the same thing. Prolonged pain from blocking the symptoms of pain. Now, here's the crazy part. They followed up by looking at 500,000 people in the United Kingdom's what's called their biobank. It's their system that manages everybody who's in their medical system over there under their socialized process. What they found is that people who were taking non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs and corticosteroids from the onset of their pain were far more likely to still be in pain 2 to 10 years after the fact. Now, you want to know why that's a big deal? Because non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs are the number one prescribed thing for all pain conditions. So you want to know the difference between pain management and pain resolution? One of them understands that covering symptoms may not be in the best interests of that person. And instead, I should figure out what's causing the problem and begin addressing those issues one by one. And like you said earlier, empowering that person to help themselves and work towards that long-term elimination of the thing that's creating the symptom of pain.
So why are we geared toward looking towards these extrinsic solutions for pain? You know, I was in that situation too, where I was looking, what can I take, right? Mm-hmm. What can I put inside my body to help it stop? Mm-hmm. Years and years ago, I was in that position. Why are we doing that?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things that go into that. Number one, it's always nice if you can resolve a problem instantaneously. So everybody wants that instant gratification. We're all wired.
The magic
for that.
Pill or the quick
that's
fix.
That it's very appealing, right? But I think that, you know, with this information age, people have been marketed to death, and they understand that the meaningful things in life have to be earned. Mm-hmm. But there's always that temptation, you know, that forbidden fruit. I want the immediate gratification. And it's also very tempting to outsource your responsibility, right? I don't want to really work for this. Let me just pop this pill and get on with my day, right? But there's something a little bit more insidious, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do want to mention this because it is very real. And this was published actually in 2018 in the medical journal, The Lancet, which is one of the most well-respected journals in the world. And what they found is that the reason that, say, conventional medicine is continuing to do these things, hopefully that'll be changing in light of this brand new research from May of 2022. Like, how can you, in good conscience, give a substance that is proven to prolong people's pain? You can't do it. It's unconscionable. But there unfortunately has been some financial incentive to doing these things. You know, there's people making a lot of money off non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs.
Yeah,
I believe it's I'm going to misquote it. I believe it's 300 billion doses taken a year of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs when you combine prescription and over the counter. That's from Harvard Health. I'll get you the right number if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no. And even, you know, even if we're close to that number, that's a lot of people that are not just taking these maybe one, you know, once here, once there, they're on probably a continuing regimen or daily regimen of taking these medications.
Yeah. So the number for sure was 15% of the population in the United States is taking those drugs on an ongoing basis.
Wow.
Yeah, there's big problems with those. I'm actually working on a paper with about that now. There's quite a bit of evidence that shows that not only are they prolonging pain, but they actually contribute to erosion of joint tissue, especially cartilage. So when a person comes in and they've got chronic hip pain and they've got degeneration at their hip, and you're prescribing a drug that prolongs the pain and contributes to erosion, eroding the joint tissue, you've got a serious problem on your hands. You know, maybe prior to this study, you could say, oh, we didn't know any better, and I was trying to do the humane thing. But now, you know, it's the onus is really on us to do better. And I don't want to paint doctors as bad people. They are all trying to do the best for their patients. They work their butts off to become doctors. They have their patients' best interests at heart, but they're operating now under a medical system, at least here in the United States, that is for profit. You know, it's being run by business majors that are sitting up on the top floor of those hospitals. And I have plenty of patients who are medical doctors, you know, medical doctors of 30 years, 35 years. And they're telling me, Kevin, how much they hate the job now because they have somebody looking over their shoulder saying like, hey, hurry up. You have to see more people per hour. So when you contrast that to the beginning of their career, say 30 years ago, they got the time to actually doctor their patients. So I don't want to come across that I'm saying that medical doctors are bad folks. Absolutely not the case. I have many patients, many friends that are in that role, and they absolutely are trying to do the best for their patients. But the for-profit model is failing our society. You know, the United States spends more on healthcare than any other modernized country in the world, and our outcomes are among the worst. So it's very clear that all of that spending is not leading to better outcomes. And I think if we spent less and we went back to the basics and taught people what's required to feel good and function optimally, dentists did it. How much does toothpaste, toothbrush, and dental floss cost? It costs nothing, and yet it leads to these amazing outcomes. We need to be doing the exact same thing with chronic pain.
You know, what's interesting about that is that we've had plenty of medical doctors, physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners come through our programs and even talk about how the education they're receiving is not focused on the nutrition components, the exercise components, all those other things. And that's unfortunate because you usually have a patient that receives a diagnosis. They get a 15 to 20 minute appointment, and then they're on their way till their next appointment 6 months or a year down the road. And they need more than that during that time. So how can we do better, especially as it relates to chronic pain? Like, what does it look like moving forward and starting to make improvements with not necessarily, a pain management, the typical pain management solutions with medication?
Well, one of the things that I would just say first is that it's super exciting for me to hear that clinicians and physicians are going through your program, because they're spending their own dime to do that. And what they're getting in medical schools is being fed by the people who have, unfortunately, a financial interest in what those clinicians do once they're seeing patients in practice. So for them to spend their own dimes, their own money, and to come through your program to really educate their patients gives me so much hope for the future. I think that's awesome. What it comes down to is essentially what you do in your program as well, which is understanding the factors that contribute to these problems. You have to educate yourself, and then you have to begin implementing those in a way that works for you. You know, there's no one approach that works across the board for everyone. There might be one standard, but getting to that standard, that path that leads each person there, is going to look very different from one person to the next. It depends on what they're coming in with, their personal tastes and preferences. What do they have aversions to? You can't start somebody off with something that they hate, but we do need to get to a point where everybody has healthy teeth and gums, and that requires brushing and flossing your teeth. We do need to get to a point where people are normalizing their structure so that they can function optimally, so that they can not destroy the joints of their body. We need to get to a place where where the number one prescribed treatment for pain is not something that causes pain and prolongs the problem that we're trying to fix. You know, so there are some very easy things that people are can be doing. Optimizing sleep patterns can do wonders for decreasing pain. We've got studies that show that one night of bad sleep increases a person's perceived pain level significantly. One night. You want to improve, you want to reduce your pain levels? Start sleeping better. Figure out what factors contribute to a healthy night's sleep. Start implementing those. Do you need a darker room? Do you need to eat your dinner earlier? Do you need a cooler room? You know, does your body position need to be different? Do you need a more supportive sleep surface? There's a million factors that go into that, but you can take them down one at a time. But essentially what it requires is a commitment. And again, to use your word, taking ownership of your situation and saying, what I've done up until this point has gotten me to where I am, which is not to assign blame. It's instead to say, I can do something about this. If my teeth are rotting out of my mouth and I start brushing and flossing my teeth, changing my diet, I'm going to alter the outcome of this. Same thing with chronic pain. If you put in some little daily habits, you can begin changing your outcome. And I've seen people go from racked with pain, can't do any of the things that they love in life. One of the things that somebody said to me that was so powerful was, I feel like I'm living my life like inside of a cage. I can't do any of the things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. It's a miserable way to go through life. Once you understand that, that person understood, for example, that some of these things that she was doing were putting the walls of that cage around her, it was like, yeah, there's this cognitive dissonance where it kind of hurts for a little bit. And then you gotta, and then you say like, wow, but if I change that, then I get to change the back end as well. And that should make people excited. And it gives them the ability to really dictate the quality of their life. And then they can seek out guides to help them along the way. You know, I love that you used that word guide earlier. And that's pretty much what I consider my role in the clinic. You know, I consider it, hey, we're going walking in a wilderness. I'm going to show you where to step and where not to step. I'm going to show you what that broken branch means. I'm going to watch the stars and the surrounding terrain and make sure that we're always headed in the right direction. But you're the one that has to walk the steps.
That's right. And you've actually created a process and a specific protocol around this too, which is called the pain fix protocol. Mm-hmm. And that is what we talked about. It takes the scientific research, these essential concepts. Tell me a little bit about that, please.
Sure. Yeah. So it's an evidence-based, clinically proven program. So it's basically the process that I've used over the last 16 years boiled down. So it empowers chronic pain sufferers to accurately detect and correct the underlying factors that are contributing to the most common chronic pain problems in the world. That's what it's about. It's not do this because I said so. It's go through these tests, see which of these factors are contributing to your problem, understand why that's happening, and then here are some things that you can do to correct it. And it walks you through those steps one at a time. So there's educational videos that talk about the origins of pain, how it functions neurologically, what factors contributed to it. And then there are sections for all of the most common chronic pain conditions in the world so that when a person goes through their self-assessment, they can say, this program is going to be the one that's going to make the biggest dent in my situation. They can work their way through that. There's assessments along the way, and then they can come back, reassess, and see what I was telling you about earlier, which is how that changing your structure, changing your ability to function will alter those pain outcomes. I mean, it's step number one, really. If you're driving in your car and the steering wheel's rattling, you know, the first thing that you need to do is get out and check your tires. Next thing you need to do is get out and check your alignment, right? You do the basic most likely problems before you start going to the exotic stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that you're talking about measuring progress along the way and having some maybe objective measurements that we can look at, which is really helpful.
That's a really good point, Kevin. Let me just piggyback on that for a second. Yeah. So one of the things that I did in clinical practice early on that was a total screw up on my part was going off of symptoms. If you go off of pain symptoms, you are doomed to fail when you're working with chronic pain, because pain is shifty. It moves around. Pain is it's a feeling. You can't measure pain. I mean, you can objectively put a number on it, or subjectively rather, you can subjectively put a number on it, but you can't objectively measure pain. Nobody can, I could not tell you how much pain you're having, and you could not tell me how much pain I'm having, which is why that study on sleep is so powerful. You could take a person who had, you x-rayed them, say they found a severe arthritic degeneration of the knee and their meniscus is all torn up and their normal pain level is a 5. Well, you could measure their pain level the next day and it could be a 7 because they had a bad night's sleep. So if you're chasing pain as a clinician, you've got a huge problem on your hands because you're never going to get anywhere. It's like the dog chasing his tail in the backyard. Yeah. So you, that's the reason that I created this functional model, because with that functional model, you do have the objectivity. That's how things work. When I was originally working on kinesiology and chiropractic, my goal originally was to work with athletes, because everything is objective. The only thing that we would ask subjectively of athletes is, how do you feel today? The reason I would ask you how you feel, Kevin, is because it lets me know with a great deal of accuracy how hard I can push you on a given day. The highest level Olympic coaches, they found that you can measure all these blood panels and you can measure people's stress hormones and you can do all these things. But for a person who's in tune with their body, you can just ask them how they're feeling and you'll know how hard you can push them on a given day. That person's like, like, oh, I feel great. I feel charged up. I'm ready to go. Let's get after it. That's awesome. For the person who's beat up, they're like, oh, I'm feeling like a little stiff and tired today. That good coach is going to back off in that. They're going to do some active recovery. They're going to keep the volume low that day. And then they're going to ask them again tomorrow, hey, how do you feel? Did we back off again? Do we need to do another back off day? Or do you feel like ready to get after it today? So that's the only thing that I want to know subjectively. As far as objectively, hey, can you turn your head? Can you tilt your head? Can you look upward? Can you get down and up off the floor? Can you twist your back? Can you bend your knee? You know, okay, well, let's figure out a way to help you get to the point where you can do those things. Let's ease you into that. Let's get that toe in the pool and feel the temperature. And then we can kind of ease you through the process of getting there. And there are regressions and there are progressions that are built into it so that you could take somebody who's at any fitness level, any level of pain in their body, and you can ease them through the process. That's what I meant by blending the art and the science, because that scientific model is always there. That goal is always there. That we know where we're going, but you can't take every person there in exactly the same way.
Love it. And I want to make sure that our audience knows how to, if they're, you know, this has been a great conversation. Really appreciate you having coming on and having a conversation with us, Dr. Yoni. I want people to be able to access, do you have maybe something we can link in the show notes so they could look at the Pain Fix protocol and then maybe some other resources you have?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll send you over the links for the Pain Fix protocol. And then I've got a YouTube channel where I put out videos every single week on a variety of topics, all free. Just trying to give people information that they can use to help themselves.
Awesome. And that's Dr. Yoni Whitten. Is there a specific handle for that YouTube channel that you have?
Pain Fix protocol. And I'll send you the link.
Awesome. Okay. So that's great. And that's where we'll be able to find Dr. Yoni at. And any other last closing things you want to mention here that you think are important for us to know?
I just want to thank you so much for having me on, Kevin. It's been really nice talking with you. And I love the approach that you use over at Bone Coach with empowering people. And I think it's a really good synergy between what you do and what I'm trying to do as well.
Totally agree. First time you and I had a conversation, I was like, you know, we're in total alignment here. So I'm glad that you came on here. And for everybody listening, you can find all the resources, show notes, everything we mentioned here today over at bonecoach.com/ Dr. Yoni Whitten Pain Fix Protocol. I want to thank you again so much for your time. We'll see you in the next episode. Hey, it's Bone Coach Kevin Ellis. Hope you found that episode helpful and that you enjoyed it. Just one last reminder, if you haven't done so already, head over to bonecoach.com, sign up for your free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart. It's going to tell you everything you need to do to start getting on the path to improvement. Hope you found this helpful. I'm your Bone Coach Kevin Ellis. I'll see you soon.